You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 3rd, 2017. I almost said 16. And episode number 296, and this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. I was going to change that up for the year. I like changing things up when we hit New Year's, but I don't know. It's just comfortable. It's like an old pair of shoes. Well, this week's news includes MUFON sighting statistics for December. Wow. And we'll wrap up the year in those statistics as well. We'll have a little bit of MUFON news as they're looking to update. And is someone staring at you? You might want to look over your left shoulder. There you go. You see them? And keep your eyes in the skies. I say that every week, but there's a story about that. And we'll talk about the return of the Afflocalypse again. And we'll have the book of the week as well. Yeah, as we normally do. And the news is a little thin, but as to be expected. But there's some interesting stuff tonight. It's weird. It's 48 degrees and raining here in Northeast Ohio, which is really, really weird. Well, it was. It's like 12 degrees colder now. But this winter is weird. There was talking about sub-freezing weather and all this other stuff. Well, it hasn't happened here yet, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. Global warming. This week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And now the bills are paid. Well, Happy New Year to everyone out there. I haven't seen or heard you guys for a year. It's been a long time. Well, a week, but it's a new year. So Happy New Year. Hope everything is good on your end and nobody got hurt with fireworks, putting them in your ears or anything like that. I've heard some weird stories. People still shoot off fireworks? I don't know. It used to be a big deal when I was younger, but I don't really care. I don't really watch that stuff ever since, Dick Clark and everything, but I don't like this new guy, whoever this guy is. Can't stand him. He's really annoying. And that lady that is always making out with people after the ball drops. Anyway. But for me here on the show, last year, it was a great year. It was a fun year. The first full year here on WCJV. And I really want to thank everyone, anyone and everyone who's listened to the show, shown up in the chat room. It's made me feel successful. And I think the show has been quite successful throughout the year, and it just started to get a lot better there towards the end of the year. So hopefully I can carry that momentum through into 2017. And it's actually the ninth year of this show, which is quite amazing. And I got the 300th episode is coming up in a few weeks. This is episode 296. So yeah, it's coming up pretty quick. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I don't know. What do you do for a 300th show? Not sure. But if you missed last week's show, wow. Well, you missed a 2-hour extravaganza of stories that reach back to 2008 when the show began. I covered the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2010 through 2016 with a reveal of the number two and number one stories of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. I also covered a lot of other things, some hoaxes that happened, and a little bit of news sprinkled in for seasoning. And it was a great show. I lost my voice like the next couple of days after that, but it was well worth it to bring you 2 hours of nonstop talking from my little studio here in Northeast Ohio. But here we are. The calendar's flipped. It's a new year. So we're looking forward, looking ahead at what's to come. And I should have done predictions. What do you guys think is going to happen? I hate to say this. This is grim news. But I got a weird feeling that we're due for a very large earthquake somewhere in the United States. I don't know where. I'm not sure where. It's either going to be in the Midwest or it's going to be in California again. And it's weird because I've been reading a lot of stuff about earthquake activity along the U.S.-Mexico border near California. And that's a little unnerving because they always talk about that big one that's going to dump part of California into the ocean. I kind of think that would be a good thing partially, but no, that'd be horrible. Lots of casualties, but I don't know. It's something that I've been thinking about, earthquakes. I don't know why, but seems like there's been a lot of volcanic activity, a lot of earthquake activity ramping up for something. I don't know what, but I think something is about ready to give way, I guess, here in the United States. That's my prediction. What say you? I don't know. A few things I'm working on here for the new year. Last year, I updated the website completely, pretty much from scratch. So that was a lot of work. I'm not doing that again this year. No thanks. It's too much work. It's a lot of work. I am, however, going to update some stuff. I'm going to add a couple of blogs. I've been working on a couple of different things writing-wise, but I'm going to be blogging about the article that I wrote about the Loveland Frog that appeared in the fourth issue of Cryptoculture magazine that was released last November. And I'm also working on getting the top 10 paranormal news stories in print so you can read it. If you don't want to listen to me talk or mumble for 2 hours from the December 27th show, I'll try to have that all done at the latest. That'll be done before next week's show, I promise. I'm going to try to work on it Friday. By Friday, I should hopefully have that done and get that released out to some of the paranormal news outlets to see if they want to cover that or not. If they argue with me about the my personal top 10, the way I have it ramped up. But again, blame me. If you don't like that, it's my fault. Cryptoculture, I'm also working on another article for a future issue, but I'm not sure if I'll have that done in time for the one that's coming up. Just getting kind of carried away with this. I was working on a book project, but I've been working on this article for quite a while. I don't know. Just kind of distracted. I get very distracted very easily. Bright lights, quick movements. I'm distracted. I don't even know what's going on half the time. And the website. I mentioned the website. I'm actually going to do a page that's going to highlight the books of the week that I've been talking about. The books of the week just kind of – it's just something I thought of. And I thought, hey, you know what? Let's talk books. This is a show about educating. This is a show about documenting things that have happened in the various anomalous fields. And I think books really tie into this field a lot. A lot of these stories do involve books. And as a matter of fact, tonight, the book of the week is mentioned in a story. So a lot of this stuff kind of goes hand in hand. So I don't know. I just started that. And I thought I'm starting to approach some authors and approach some publishers about getting some copies. Essentially what they call review copies. And I've sent a lot of those out. The first time anybody asked me for one, I was like, wait, you want me to send you a free book just so you can read it and review it? No, that's ridiculous. But that's unfortunately, if you're an author, that's something that you have to do to get your work out there for other people to talk about it and to get it noticed. So I'm hoping to get my hands on some newer books, new stuff, because a lot of stuff I'm talking about is a little bit older. I do have a small pile of books here next to me that are fairly new. And I just got one in the mail today, as a matter of fact. Today, I'm excited to get my little paws on that one. I'll talk about that when we talk about MUFON later on. Yeah, review copies. If anybody out there has written a book and you want me to review it, and like I said, I'm going to be creating a whole page for the books of the week and with a little link to the episode in which it occurs, is obviously a link to where people can purchase these books or author pages or anything like that that you want me to put on there. So that'll be a little bit of work. I mean, I've done that for 70 episodes or something. So I have 70 books of the week or so, give or take a dozen. So that's a lot of work. But I really feel like I owe it to the authors. I really want to help get their work out there. I know what it's like to be a struggling author, to get your book noticed and get people talking about your book. Yeah, I thought I was starving artist, not starving author, but pretty much the same thing. Just the same way that I get the conscious conventions out there. I think that's a rough business if you've never put one on. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time. So I like to give back to the paranormal community by talking about these things or get this stuff on a website and get it mentioned. And essentially, it's a little bit of a symbiotic relationship when it comes to the book things, where I'm going to talk about the book, post links in multiple locations on the website, and also mention it through social media. So a free book, you may see it as that way. I'm begging for a free book so I can add to my vast library, add to my vast knowledge, and continue to learn more and take over the world as the paranormal expert of all experts. Not really. There's no such thing. But anyway, no, I just want to give back, and it gets a little expensive buying books, but hey, that's a professional thing to do, right? Ask for review copies. So something I'm working on this year to get some new fresh material out there. Not only that, but my bookshelf is getting a little thin from books of the week and eventually run out, but still got a ways to go. But I'd like to get some new fresh stuff out there for you guys. And I've mentioned weeks past the events listing. I really need to update that again. I know I just updated it last month. I got a few coming on this weekend. Coming up this weekend, I'll talk about if I have some time later on in the show. But it's at that time where a lot of people are updating their events for the rest of the season. So keeping an eye on that and keeping that fresh as well for the events coming up here in 2017. And I got a few I'm excited about. I'll be at the St. Albans Sanatorium in late May, all the way down in Radford, Virginia. It's quite a drive, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Love Virginia. A lot of great people down there. And that event, I've never been to St. Albans Sanatorium. I think I belong in a sanatorium, but maybe I'll feel like home. But it'll be a blast. It'll be a great time. And you can check that one out at enigmacons.com, enigmacons.com. But before that one, my goodness, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure Part 2. It's going to return next year, May 5th through the 7th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Get your tickets now. I'll be speaking there. Steve Coles, the Squatch Detective, Stan Gordon, Jay Baterchin, Eric Altman, who's hosting the event, will also be speaking. And somebody else. They haven't released the name of the last speaker, but heard it's a big name. I don't know who. And Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters. You watch that show? I don't watch the show. You watch the show? I don't watch it. He's going to be there. Oh, he was there last year. My goodness. His line was about a quarter of a mile long. I was just going to walk up and down the line and see if anybody wanted to buy anything. And my table was empty. There was like a couple like moths that landed on my table. That was pretty much all the traffic I had for a couple hours. But tickets went on sale back in September. But there are still tickets available. I would get them quick. And also, at the same time, you're going to have to get a place to stay. Benner's Meadow Run Cabins is a location in Farmington, and it's separate. So if you buy a ticket, that doesn't give you a camping spot or anything like that. You're going to have to go to Benner's Meadow Run Cabins and let them know that you're there. I think you get a discount. Yeah, you get a discount. I got a discount. You should get one too. And then you can stay in a campground. It'll be a little cold probably. It'll be a little wet probably, more than likely. So, you know, I won't make fun of you if you stay in a hotel. But you can also bring your RV If you bring your RV, invite me in. Play some cards. Camping is fun. I love it. It's a lot of fun. Me, I pitch a tent. Well, I shouldn't say pitch a tent. That's never mind. I like staying in tents. It's fun. I just saw today they have some shirts, t-shirts coming up for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. They look pretty cool. The logo says "The Adventure of a Lifetime." Well, I had one last year, so I don't know. I've lived another life since then, but it was exciting. It was a lot of fun. It was totally different than what you're used to as far as a convention, especially a Bigfoot type convention, because we had speakers. In between speakers, not speakers like radio speakers, but people who spoke. And then we had lecture workshops in between all that, where they talked about how to make casts, how to do some of the individual things that we've talked about as speakers during the event. And then they had in the evenings and in the mornings, we took people out on a trail very close to the campground, actually right behind the campground, and demonstrated some of the techniques that we do, some of the things that we look for. And we were overwhelmed by the amount of people that were there. It was just probably too many people, but it was still interesting. We learned a little bit of stuff, and it taught a lot of people some things, and it was a lot of fun. But it's hands-on, which you don't get to have that at most of these types of events. And I'm really looking forward to that this year. It's this year. What else? Speaking of Eric Altman, I'm going to be appearing on his show, Beyond the Edge Radio, on January 15th. From 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. That's going to be beyondtheedgeradio.com. Looking forward to that. Haven't talked to Eric in a while. Great guy. Awesome researcher. Very like-minded with myself about how he does his work. So let's talk numbers. You like numbers? You like statistics? I love statistics. Numbers don't lie. Who was it that said something about... lies, damnable lies, and statistics or something. I don't know how it went. But anyway, UFO news. Let's talk MUFON. In case you're not aware, MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network. And it's the pretty much the largest UFO research outlet, if not in the world, at least in the United States. It's a big deal. I just updated my membership this year. Last year, I guess December, I paid for another year. They sent me some really neat stuff, which I'll talk about here in a second. But they released their December sighting statistics on the 1st. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton, who's a field researcher, or I should say field investigator for MUFON, the Pennsylvania area. She's kind of based out of Erie, PA, but she's everywhere. She sent me the email real quick. It's weird because sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I get it in the middle of the month. I got November's, I think, on December 19th or 20th, which is weird. And I'd already covered it in the show like 3 weeks prior. So you're getting some information that you might not get your hands on for a little while. Thanks to her. And... looking at my prediction. Well, my predictions didn't really pan out this month. I've had the last few months since April of 2016. I give my predictions of what I think the worldwide total is and what the U.S. total is. My guess. I've been pretty close. A couple of times I've been within one, which is pretty startling. It's pretty good. See, I've been within one on the... total worldwide sightings. That was back in August. I guess 695, it was 696. That's just amazing. I should have played the lottery. I didn't. November, I got close with the U.S. I was within four. That was pretty good. But this month, I should say December, I didn't do so well. Didn't do so hot. I made a prediction of 491 total worldwide sightings. I wasn't even close, in my opinion. MUFON logged 539 total worldwide sightings. But again, statistics, if you do the math, that's within 10%. Barely. It's like 9.9%, but it's still within 10%. So it's not too bad. Now, of the 539 total worldwide reports, there were 405 in the United States. Now, my prediction was 357. Whoops. So I came up a bit short in that area. Again, 405 logged in by MUFON, and I guessed 357. Oops. Well, the United Kingdom, they turned in the next highest amount of reports with 36. Canada was third with 28. And Mexico, Australia, and Brazil turned in 6 reports each. And 29 other countries turned in 4 or less reports each. Now, again, I talk about this every month, but yes, MUFON is a worldwide organization, but they don't really have a whole lot of investigators. I don't even know if they have any outside of this country or in any other countries to really go after these reports. And a lot of these countries, I know Brazil, they have, and Mexico especially, they have a huge network of other reporting sites. They have TV shows. They have some local news stations that actually investigate UFO sightings. So their culture is a little different than ours. So MUFON's not really going to get a lot of cases from them. Their presence isn't as big as it could be in these other countries for a lot of reasons, but that could change. It would be interesting to see all of these reports kind of funneled into one area. And I think MUFON would be the one to do it, but they got a little growing to do, and we'll talk about that here in a second. Now, as far as the United States is concerned, the top state, as always, was California. Well, it's always because it has the highest population of any U.S. state. And I use the total population that was gathered in the July 2014. So it's a kind of a guesstimate state by state. And I use that census, that the guesswork. And California would come in at number one with just under 39 million people. So it's the number one state. So it should have the highest number of reports. Texas is number two with just under 27 million. Florida, number three with just under 20 million. Then you got New York, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Georgia, North Carolina, and Michigan in that top 10. So those states should traditionally have the highest number of reports. So if we look at this here again, California with 49 reports leading the way. Florida had 43. New York had 23 reports. Texas had 22. Michigan was 17. Ohio and North Carolina had 12 each. Arizona, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Washington, and New Mexico turned in 11 reports each. And Illinois, South Carolina, and Wisconsin had 10 reports each. Now there's 33 states, including the District of Columbia, that turned in 9 or less reports. Now, 5 of those, including Washington, D.C., turned in 1 report each. And I like to do a little thing where I break down the per capita of each state. And MUFON used to do that. They don't do it anymore because it's really statistically insignificant. But I like to do that because it kind of breaks apart the numbers game, because like I mentioned, certain states are going to have the highest number of reports, and it really doesn't give you a good visual as to where some of these hotspots are occurring. And the other issue with these reports is they're just turned in during that month. They might not have happened in December. They could have happened in July. You know, and Johnny's just getting around to logging his thing in there. You know, he's been busy. You know, he's been busy doing stuff, busy working in the garden, busy drinking beer, whatever he's doing. And he just hasn't had time to phone in his report or log his report, and finally got around to it. So it's kind of skewed in that aspect because you don't know exactly when all of these reports are being logged. That would be kind of difficult to kind of break that down any other way, but I'm sure it's possible. Sure, it's possible. But I like to break it down. And per capita, I look at it, sightings per 100,000 people. So some of these states, like I've mentioned, California with 39 million people, you'd have to have a lot of sightings to be anything significant in the 40s. It was usually as a launching point. So California, 49 sightings It's a 0.126 per capita. So 0.126. It's like two fingers on a hand of a person saw a UFO. It's essentially almost one in a million at that point. South Dakota, which is number 46 in population, it's down there. Well, they logged a 0.234. So it's like almost a quarter of a person per 100,000 people, or one person in 400,000 people logged a UFO sighting. And there was only two reports. So that's really statistically insignificant. Then you have California, Florida, 43 sightings. But again, they're one of the top 10 states as far as population. So their number drops is 0.216. So it's really, again, 20% of a person. South Carolina, 0.207 with 10 sightings. State of Oregon with a 0.201 with 8 sightings. Idaho is the 39th in population. And they logged 0.367, which is pretty good. There's only 6 sightings. 0.367. So nearly one every 300,000 people or so, give or take. And the state of Maine, which is number 41 in population, it's down there, logged a 0.451. That's pretty good. That's almost half a person per 100,000 people, or almost one in 200,000 people. But they only logged 6 sightings. So again, not really significant. Now, New Mexico. New Mexico is the winner of the month, as far as I'm concerned, with the most significant number of sightings correlated with the most significant per capita number. Now, they logged 0.527. And granted, there was only 11 sightings, but 0.527, that's pretty good. It's just over one person per 200,000 people, or half a person. Can you log a UFO sighting with half a person? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't have legs. I don't know. But 11 people in New Mexico, or 11 sightings. I don't know if they're actually all the same sighting, or two or three of them are the same sighting. Just 11 reports. But it's still interesting to look at how New Mexico has logged a per capita a lot more sightings than anybody else, even with 11. So New Mexico would be pretty much number one in that listing, even though they're number 36 in population. So I know it's a weird thing to do, but to me, I think it provides a better picture of the sightings as to where they're occurring or where they're being reported. But again, it doesn't really paint a picture of any kind of event that has occurred in New Mexico or anything like that. There might not have been some major UFO sighting that occurred in New Mexico during the month of December. It just happened to come out that way, to where these reports were flowing in that particular month from that state. Might be a little bit of a coincidence, perchance. But still, I think it's interesting to at least talk about it, have a discussion. You know, well, it's not really a discussion because I'm talking to myself, but I'm talking to you and you're listening. Maybe you're talking to me, but I can't hear you. I don't know. Maybe it is a discussion. But to get this information out there this way, I think is significant in that aspect, that we can kind of think about these sightings in a different way other than just numbers per state. But each state having its own per capita and its percentage versus other states. So states continue to pop up over and over, which I don't really see that happening much. November was Arizona, which it's out west. They had a 0.252, 17 sightings. And October was Missouri with a 0.296. That's pretty low, with 18 sightings. And we'll go back to Vermont in August, Vermont in July. That's kind of interesting. And then June was Alaska with a 0.68. with a whopping 5 sightings. So I see Vermont, Arizona, Alaska are back there for the beginning of the year last year. So that's kind of interesting to see that kind of a little bit of a pattern there. I don't know. Arizona, it's been a hot spot for years, if you know anything about that. But yeah, MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. And big thanks to MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton for this month's sighting statistics, the numbers that I like to crunch and I like to look at. But before I stop, I got to remember final statistics. Now, last year was a significant year in sighting statistics. I think a lot due to Hangar One, the television show that was on the History Channel. They logged a total of 10,911 worldwide sightings for 2015. And that translates out to 909.25 per month. Well, 2016, they only logged 7,276, which translates to 606.3 per month. And U.S. sightings were 5,358, which translates to 446.5 per month. Still good. Not as strong as last year, but you kind of expect that to kind of balance things out a little bit. We are tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. We're at the bottom of the hour. I haven't even gotten to the news yet. My goodness, I hope you're still listening. My ranting and raving. Well, we're on the news, I guess, with the MUFON sighting statistics. But speaking of MUFON, speaking of the Mutual UFO Network, like I mentioned, I got a little package in the mail today. I got a new book. I'm excited. I didn't buy one last year, but when I renewed the year before, I bought a book. This one I'm really excited about. It's not the book of the week yet, but this book is on the Phoenix Lights. And it's an autographed copy from Lynn D. Something like that. But yeah, I'm excited about this. A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. Phoenix Lights. Autographed copy. Very cool. I got to get to reading that. I got like 10 other books I'm reading right now. Kind of horrifying. Trying to write and trying to read at the same time. It's not easy. It's not user-friendly. So I'm going to throw this link in here in the chat room. It's about donating to MUFON. I know. Everybody's looking for money, but MUFON, I think this is a worthwhile organization. Now, MUFON, we've talked about this before, and it was a story that did not make the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. They kind of flopped the year before. They had a I can't remember the name of the which one they did, but they did one of those fundraising, online fundraising things, and it did not work out too well. They did not meet their goal. They did not raise the money that they wanted to, and they were looking to update their website. And it was really bad. I felt really bad for MUFON because they try really hard. It's a great organization. There's tons of great people that are involved with it. And you know, they've had a rocky relationship with some of the public and some of the people that are within the UFO field, kind of question where the money is coming from sometimes and question some of the judgments of some of the people. But I think, you know, long term, you stand back and you look at this organization and it does something that no other anomalous field has been able to do. And that's bring reports together, bring information together and funnel it from one agency. And they do a phenomenal job for what they can, for what, you know, little income they have and what resources they have. But, you know, I think highly of them. And I've been a MUFON member for at least 15 years, if not longer. I don't know. I have to look at my little membership card. But MUFON, they've been struggling to update some of their image. And they created a new logo last year, but they're still trying to put some of the pieces together to move forward as an organization. They're still looking to create a mobile-friendly website, which is a very smart thing, very smart move to do. As they say that 50% of the reports are coming in through mobile devices. So yes, having a mobile-friendly website in this day and age are pretty much a must. I know mine isn't very mobile friendly, but you can, through Chrome, you can click a little thing at the bottom there and make it user friendly, and it looks kind of cool. But as far as MUFON's concerned, part of that also includes making their case management system accessible through mobile devices as well, which is their case management system is, I put this nicely, it's kind of old. It's kind of out of date. It's kind of confusing a little bit. Very hard as a researcher to look through stuff, to look up things. Unless you've used it for years like I have, it gets easier with time, but it shouldn't be like that. It should be, it's very user friendly, and it's lacking some, I don't know. It just needs an update. It kind of needs an overhaul, and that's something they're working on as well. They're looking to create a new user friendly archive system. And this is kind of weird. This is the first I've heard of this. It's called the MUFON Anomaly Research and Reporting System, or MARS for short, M-A-R-R-S, MUFON Anomaly Research and Reporting System. Now, they're also looking to update their website from scratch. Do they have a little link? I don't remember where. I don't have it here. There's a link that you can look at. Their kind of concept of what their website's going to look like. It's really I mean, okay, it's modern looking, but it doesn't really like blow your socks off or anything. But it's a fresh step. They need to update their website. It's kind of stale. If you don't change, you kind of stay the same. I guess that speaks for itself. But I think they're due for a little bit of an overhaul with their website. They seem to want to spend a lot of money on it. That's like $15,000. I could do it a lot cheaper, guys. Another interesting idea. This really piqued my interest when I read this. They're trying to get funded is a physical library for researchers that will include at least 3,000 books in addition to photographs and video files. Again, a physical library. So you can go in there as a member and do some research. I know the American Society for Psychical Research has a library that I've been to New York City, went there once, and it was closed. They had really weird hours. But it was cool. I don't think I even had a camera. That's how long ago I was there. I had one of those little bricks they used to carry with the 35mm film. That's how long ago I was there. But anyway, it would be really interesting to see a physical library where researchers and people could get together. But that's expensive to buy a little building and house a bunch of books. You know, it depends on where it's at. If it's going to be in Colorado, I don't know how often I would get out there, but I don't know. We'll see. It's on the list, but they got a lot of their work to do first. Granted, they're just looking at getting just general donations to keep the lights on and to keep their basic research functioning. So if you're interested in helping MUFON, head to MUFON.com, MUFON.com. You can click on the donate button on the top right. You can also become a member as well. They have inside my little package, I got this little trifold pamphlet thing. It's a little out of date though, but they talk about all the things that they do. They have an executive director, which is Jan C. Harzan. They have a board of directors. They have their journal for members, which is interesting. I read mine online. They have a annual symposium. They have minimum 3,500 members. Their case management system, CMS, which they're going to hopefully update soon. 800 plus trained field investigators and a nationwide rapid response team for high value cases known as the STAR team. That would be my dream. And it's a really cool card I got too. It's inspiring. I don't personally have really the time to dedicate. Same issue I had a number of years ago when I first joined MUFON. I wanted to become a field investigator. I was a field investigator trainee. I didn't really have the time. I could not dedicate the full time that it would take to do that. You know, hosting a radio show, writing books, and all the other little things I do, let alone, you know, being married and having a life and working a 40-hour plus week job. I really can't dedicate what I would want to personally dedicate to becoming a field investigator. They got this fancy card. It was really cool. And they say 5 easy steps. Become a MUFON member, which is really simple. You just go to MUFON.com. click join and pay. Contact your state director, which my state director, I see him at meetings monthly at the, well, I haven't been there in a while, the Cleveland Ufology Project. So I know where to get a hold of him. Plus, we're friends on Facebook. Three, sign up for online training or purchase your own field investigator's manual from their website. It's cool. It's in color now. The one I have is all black and white. It's great. It's a little expensive. I won't tell you how much. It's a little on the expensive side. But it's a ton of information in there that'll help you become a better researcher and investigator. Then they get a little exam. It's not very easy. I passed it, but it's not the easiest thing. So it's not like super simple, but a lot of it's common sense. And then number five, mentor with a licensed and experienced MUFON field investigator before attempting an investigation on your own. Nice little card. Beautiful. So if you're interested in becoming a researcher and investigator, I highly recommend MUFON. MUFON, just the way they're training is that when I did it, it was a little bit of political stuff with it, but highly recommend it if you're interested in UFOs. It's not like the X-Files. It's not like Mulder and Scully. It's a lot of phone calls, a lot of talking to people. A lot of being out in the field. You're probably not going to see UFOs, but you're going to spend a lot of time talking to people who have claimed to have seen them. So be prepared for a lot of interviewing and a lot of discussion, a lot of research about that. But it's well worth it. It's a lot of fun. I've done a few UFO cases, and it seems like it's a lot more work than ghost investigations, believe it or not. But it's a lot of fun. So anyway, speaking of ghosts, a little bit of ghost news in the news this year. Interesting story. Do you ever get the feeling that someone is staring at you? I think we all do. Whether we're at work or we're driving a car and we have our finger jammed up our nose, or just out in public at all. You see a lot of people that are kind of like shift-eyed and looking around. I think they think that I'm staring at them, which I probably was, but we all kind of get that feeling. You're not alone. This very feeling has been the point of debate between psychical researchers, parapsychologists, and skeptics. And the skeptics say it's all in our minds. Surveys since 1913 have estimated that between 60 and 90% of people feel that they know when others are staring at them. Owen Phillips published an interesting story on theoutline.com about what is referred to as the psychic staring effect. Edward B. Titchener was the first to publish information about this concept back in 1898. However, in his article in Science magazine, he didn't feel this was because of anything psychic, as he said the feelings were, quote, have their justification in the breaking down of superstition, which has deep and widespread roots in the popular consciousness, unquote. He essentially felt that the feeling of being stared at was based on nervousness, social situations, or by attracting the attention of the person staring and then turning to notice the gaze. John Edgar Coover of Stanford University carried out his own experiment in 1913, but with 100 participants, his conclusion was that there was no significance to the concept that people are aware of others staring at them. The article also mentions a popular parapsychologist, Rupert Sheldrake. Now, Sheldrake wrote the book, quote, The Sense of Being Stared At, unquote. I have to quote that because he's got articles with that same name, the book with the same name, a lot of different things of The Sense of Being Stared At. In 2003, his article and his experiments were also The Sense of Being Stared At. So 2003, he carried out a number of experiments on being stared at and collected surveys from others on the same subject. Now, his conclusions, despite being proclaimed as proof of the concept, actually barely went above average. They really didn't indicate anything significant, but he claimed that it did. Now, even fellow parapsychologists pointed out flaws in Sheldrake's methodologies in the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research. However, subsequent experiments conducted in 1978 and 1983 show a little bit of suggestive evidence that people can determine periods of when people are staring at them versus not being stared at. Well, although skeptics deny that these experiments are valid, of course. Now, as for traditional science, they feel that there is a lot of confirmation bias happening by those who feel they know when someone is watching them. Essentially, we remember the times we notice this, and we forget the times that we're wrong. So it's confirmation bias. We'll tend to report the things that go along with what we think is happening, and just really kind of bury that information that would kind of go against what we're hoping would happen. Now, science also suggests that our brain merely notices small changes without our noticing them. And this might be a carryover from our prehistoric ancestors. Now, being cautious about what might be looking at us might have helped our prehistoric family from becoming a lunch. You know, some saber-toothed tiger coming along and gnawing on our leg or something. Having eyes in the back of our head, which is a thing coming from that concept of being stared at, would help us. We should rather our ancient ancestors would help them survive. So it's been passed down to be a little bit nervous, a little bit of cautious. I mean, who knows? That guy there down there in the subway might gnaw on your leg too. So you never know. Now, in 2011, Daryl Bem from Cornell University published findings that essentially stated that he found evidence for telepathy, clairvoyance, and even psychokinesis. Yes, there is a however and a but. Peer studies have failed to arrive at the same findings as Bem, and his findings have been filed in the round file. So essentially science, these guys will do their little experiment. They have surveys or whatever they do, and they publish their findings, and somebody else reads it and says, I'm not sure about that. So they design their own study, and they publish their work. It's essentially what they call peer studies, peer review. That's science, kids. Something you don't see a whole lot of in the paranormal at times. We really need a little bit more of that, but it helps kind of get rid of some of the things that we were mentioning, confirmation bias and what they call file drawer effect, different things like that that happen in science that unfortunately make scientists come to the conclusion in which they want to instead of what really is happening. And it was weird when I was reading the story. I already had another book of the week picked out, but I do have Sheldrake's The Sense of Being Stared At on my bookshelf, and I don't know why. I think it's staring at me, but I haven't pulled it out yet. I mean, Sheldrake is a pretty popular guy, but I don't know. I'm not really completely sold on this guy, to be honest with you, to be mean, but yeah, not a huge fan of his stuff overall. But this book was really, really interesting. And I know I've read it, I think twice. It's got a lot of little pieces of paper hanging out of it. That's how I do it. I use the little book tabs, and I mark like 6 billion little things in there. So anyway, that's our book of the week. This week, The Sense of Being Stared At and Other Unexplained Powers of Human Minds by Rupert Sheldrake. A good book if you've not read this. This just came out. It seems like it's been out for a long time, but it says 2013, longer than that, but I don't know. Book don't lie. The Sense of Being Stared At and Other Unexplained Powers of Human Minds. Now, it's not just that. It's not just being stared at. There is 18 chapters and 4 parts here. And looking through this, you got I guess that's the first section here. It's on The Sense of Being Stared At is chapter 1. Detecting the direction from which the gaze is coming, blah, 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 different things. It's a really good hook for something to get you involved in. But I tell you, where I have a lot of the little bookmarks here is chapter 3, where it talks about animal sensitivity and how animals in general seem to have some senses about the stuff. That, you know, I've encountered this as well. That's why I was really interested in reading this chapter. Animals just seem to know that you're there, no matter how good you're hiding. It's just weird. And if you've ever stared at your dog from behind, they just seem to know that you're looking at them, and they turn around and look at you. Granted, your dog looks at you all the time anyway, but so I guess that's nothing major. But I've seen things with pets over the years. We had a dog when I was growing up that seemed to know when my father's coming home. She just knew. He came home at different times. She always ran to the door like 10 minutes before he got home. So I always thought that was really weird, that she seemed to know. She had that kind of connection with him that she just knew. It was just weird. Then it goes into other chapters here, the evil eye. And then it goes, part two is telepathy, which is essentially mind-to-mind interaction. His chapter says picking up thoughts and intentions, experiments on thought transference. This is kind of when he lost me, because I'd already read a lot of this stuff. And it just seems like he's just, I don't know. It, judge for yourself. It is still a very good book. There's a lot of great information about experimental things, but it's broken down pretty well, that it's not overwhelming. It doesn't read like a scientific type of book. But a lot of this stuff is just based on stories. So it's a little difficult sometimes to believe everything. It also gets into remote viewing, which when I first read the book, I really wasn't into remote viewing all that much, but I've since gone through and reread it for different things, especially the chapter on animal premonitions, about animals predicting things like earthquakes, where it's been known. A lot of people report, especially in some poorer countries, when they see all the dogs taking off running, they know an earthquake is near. People know that, I guess. Avalanches, different things like that. But it's a pretty good book. I mean, it really ties some of the psychic stuff together. And I know Sheldrake is known for morphic resonance and all that stuff. But this is a really good book on psychic phenomena. So I highly recommend it. The Sense of Being Stared At and Other Unexplained Powers of Human Minds by Rupert Sheldrake. You can get it pretty cheap. It's about $14 here on Amazon. He's got 25 years of research into telepathy, staring and intention, precognition, and animal premonitions. Pretty good book. I think it was good. I didn't read the second time I read it. I just kind of picked a few parts. I didn't really read all of it, but I've gone back and forth. I probably read everything, but not all at once. I guess it's kind of not the book that you might want to read from beginning to end, is what I'm trying to say. Part of it may interest you. I highly recommend, obviously, the first couple of chapters, the first part. Then you might skip around. If you're an animal lover, you're going to want to read about the pets and animal stuff and skip around the different things. But it's worth the read. So that's your book of the week. You're welcome. In other news, space.com just released an interesting story that previews some of the upcoming sky watching events for 2017. Well, if you live here in Ohio, good luck with that. But anyway, along with a number of opportunities to see planets in various positions, the article describes how to find the other planets by using Mars, a simple method that I was taught years ago, because it's pretty easy to pick it out in the sky unless you realize that it's actually an airplane at a distance, and then you feel embarrassed. But once you know where it's at, you can use Mars to find other planets. Mars and Neptune, they're going to be very close together right now, actually. Well, not right now. Don't go out there and look right now. I'll wait till the show's over. You'll be able to see both of them together in a pair of binoculars right now, but not right now. Wait for a little bit. Another 10 minutes, you can go outside. Wear a jacket. Let's also mention, this is going to be a big story. I can tell you right now, we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about this. The Great American Total Solar Eclipse. The Great American Total Solar Eclipse. It's going to occur on August 21st of this year. Write that down. Put it on a calendar. Get ready. Especially if you live out west or in the Midwest. I won't be able to really see it full-fledged, but we'll get a taste of it. This is going to be the first one since 2012. What a year that was. And will be the last one until 2024. And this one, the 2024 one, my goodness, it's going like right over where I live. It's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to that. Forget this one. I'm waiting for 2024. My God, how old will I be? I don't even want to think about that. But that one's going to be really close, where it's going to go from the south to the northeast. The one that in this year is going to go from the west to the east. I don't know. Weird. I don't know how that works. But space.com uses examples of these upcoming events by using various apps. And I didn't really realize that there were so many apps that were geared towards staring at the stars and looking at different events that are happening out there. So this article will really give you some really good ideas of various apps that you can use on your smartphone to keep track of Mars, Neptune, and all the other planets and constellations and different things that are happening with the comets that are going by and all the meteor showers that are happening. Let me get that posted. I'll post that in the chat room. And then, obviously, I'll have these stories out to you during the week. And you can check those out at your leisure. Now, the number two story of the top paranormal news stories of 2011. 11. That was a long time ago. As well as a story that made the top 10 back in 2012 is back again this year. Now, I've kind of ignored this. And it's popped up here and there between 2012 and now, but I kind of ignored it. But this story is a little bit too much to ignore. Something is going on, and it's scientists are baffled, as they say. Baffled is the key word here. Baffled. Everyone's always baffled. The story is about the Aflocalypse. I mentioned a brief return of the Aflocalypse on the March 22nd show of 2016, where mysterious die-offs of large numbers of animals were reported. And usually they have a very little answer up front, then all of a sudden something simple comes up and it's solved. But this year, an estimated 20,000 sea animals have washed ashore in Nova Scotia. That's up in Canada for y'all who don't know that. Last month, a large amount of herring began to wash up in St. Mary's Bay, which is on the northwest side of the peninsula of Nova Scotia, and it kind of points towards the state of Maine. But now, starfish, clams, mussels, and other aquatic life are washing ashore with no known cause. Officials have ruled out toxins, infectious disease, predation, and even low oxygen levels, which tends to usually be the leading explanation for these types of die-offs, especially when you're talking about smaller marine animals, which is what we're seeing here. Water quality tests are still being performed, but strangely, the die-offs ended just as quickly as they began, which is weird. Things are seemingly right back to normal again. So whatever this was more than likely isolated. So who knows if they're ever going to figure this out. Was it a case of natural die-off, or is there something more sinister lurking in the Atlantic Ocean? I don't know. We'll figure that out. We'll keep an eye on that story. That's weird. It's weird, but it's not weird. Animals die all the time. Groups of animals die all the time, especially in the winter, depending upon what hemisphere you're in and time of the year. Large animal die-offs are not unknown to nature. They happen quite frequently. It's just survival of the fittest. It's just how nature works. It's cruel, but it happens. I mean, even on a scale of humans, it happens to us as well. Huge accidents occur, not even just man-made accidents, but natural disasters take out people all the time. I don't know why we all live by the ocean, but it is what it is. But this particular story, interesting. They don't really know what's going on. They're baffled. Well, the last story is followed closely with another interesting story out of New Jersey, where for the third time this year, birds have mysteriously fallen from the sky. Two incidents happened in November and another earlier in the year where dead birds just seemed to fall from the sky with no known cause. This latest incident focused on 200 red-winged blackbirds. In 2012, the deaths of dozens of blackbirds was traced back to a legal pesticide that is used to kill birds, which is actually known as a avicide, in case you didn't know. Well, now you know. So strange animal die-offs, it's just the time of the year, 2011 is when that started. It started in January, right off the bat. It was like the big story in January, but it kept going. It just kept happening all the way through March, April, and kind of faded away during the summertime, but it kind of came back in the fall, and it was a little scary. People thought it was the end of the world. That's why it was called the Aflocalypse. But we'll keep an eye on that story. I really don't think there's too much to worry about, especially now that things have returned back to normal down there in Nova Scotia. Never been there. Here it's nice. Anyway, events. Yes, Winter Parafest 2017. That's coming up this weekend. I guess that's Sunday. Who does an event on Sunday? I don't know. They're doing it, I guess. That's just what they're doing on a Sunday. Unless I have the date wrong. I don't know. Let me check. Winterfest, or Winter Parafest, I should say. That is occurring on January 8th, Rochester, New York. That's listed as Henrietta, which I think is a suburb of Rochester. A lot of interesting people there. Good friend Steve Coles is going to be there. What would Sasquatch do? If you've never seen Steve Coles speak, put it on your list. He's a very, very knowledgeable researcher. He's not a true believer. He's a little skeptical, but he's had his own things happen to him. But a very good speaker. Highly recommend that. The rest of these people, I don't know who they are. Heather Reese talking about spirit guides. Michael Keane talking about the psychic highway. Jack Kenna, investigating the paranormal. Christopher, something. The personal perception of the paranormal. I'm trying to read this. So it would help if I clicked on it. But looks like a nice lineup. It goes from 10 o'clock in the morning to looks like 7 o'clock. They're going to have a Q&A session. I always love those. A panel. I love the panels. Panels are fun. But the bad thing about the panels is that a lot of people leave. People that are showing up to the event and the speakers. Once things start to thin out, people pack up their books and they're gone. They're getting out of there. But I've had a lot of great discussions, not just with people, but between researchers on panels. So I do recommend that. Check that out. If you're in that area, check out the Winter Parafest 2017. And the following weekend, Ghosts of the Gold Rush. That's out in California. Yay. January 11th through the 15th. January 13th through the 15th. In Mokelum Hill, California. I have no idea where that's at. UFO events. I don't have anything till February. I got to get that updated. And at the end of the month, oh, goodness. January 27th, Squatch Fest, Longview, Washington. We'll have more about that in the upcoming weeks. And check out the events listing at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. And as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, just let me know or see it on the website. I get a lot of hits on the website for these events. I get people thanking me from all over the country. So it's a good idea to let me list your event because people, it's probably when I look at all my sites or all my pages on my website, it gets the most hits. So highly recommend that. Get your event to me and I'll put it up there, I promise. I'm pretty quick about that. So anyway, wow, the night is over. I guess I'm used to talking for 2 hours like I did last week. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer. Thank you very much for producing this show and running this network, keeping Dita in line, which is a very, very difficult job to do. For everyone else out there tuning in, live or otherwise, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, you know it. Don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.